sometimes you're just uncomfortable at a party, especially if you don't really know anybody. I know I was someone who's always just kind of sat in the corner, very much a wallflower. I know, and now I talk for a living. Anyway, what happens when you find that friendly person to talk to, you get in a great conversation, and then you find out, oh, there was no one sitting there next to you that you were talking to, according to all the other people at the party? That's a little awkward, wouldn't you say? Well, that happens in a recent episode of Real Ghost Stories Online. If you want to hear that story and more, sign up to be an EPP, Extra Podcast Person, on our website, realghoststoriesonline.com. Extra Podcast people help support our show, keep us on the air, and they get bonus content, more than 60 bonus episodes of the show, exclusive video content, and more. Thanks in advance for being an EPP. Sign up at realghoststoriesonline.com.
Welcome to Ghost Stories Online. Call in your real ghost story now at 855-853-4802 or write in at realghoststoriesonline.com. You're about to enter the world of the unknown and quite possibly the undead. This is Real Ghost Stories Online.
And on today's episode of Real Ghost Stories Online, we take you back to one of my favorite interviews of this year. We're going to talk with Michael Bodine. Very, very interesting man. I call him a real-life Ghostbuster. We're going to talk about all things paranormal, experiences, situations that he's been in and around and experienced. It is a great episode. It's an encore presentation today. I hope you enjoy it. Here's our interview from May of this year with Michael Bodine. He is a self-proclaimed Ghostbuster and also psychic. He has years and years of experience in it, all the way back to his childhood as far as psychic abilities and interactions with the paranormal. You're in for a treat this hour as we talk to him about his experiences in life with the undead on Real Ghost Stories Online. And we'll get right into that here. Our phone number is 855-853-4802 if you'd like to share your real ghost story with us so we can get to it on a future episode of Real Ghost Stories Online. Michael, the way I like to kind of begin some interviews is instead of giving the, you know, the big canned bio line that that we get in the mail, I'd rather just ask you, if I were sitting next to you on an airplane and we started having a conversation, I looked over to you and said, "So, what do you do?" How would you answer that question?
Well, it depends on your vibe. If you strike me as, say, a kind of a conservative kind of guy, I'd say I'm a writer.
Okay.
Because I wrote a book and I'm writing another book. And,
sure.
And it's easier than the look that I get if I tell people I talk to dead guys, because they give me that that up and down look and they start crossing themselves, and then they figure if they're on a plane, they're probably going to die. So.
I know that feeling. We get it too, where it's like, "So what do you do?" I'm like, "Oh, I'm in broadcasting," rather than "I host a show about ghosts."
Yeah. Yeah. It's kind of just a little thing you get. And sometimes people surprise me. Sometimes I think they're going to be open-minded and they get really nervous. And sometimes I think the most closed-minded people are the most open.
Sure.
So it just depends. I love to golf, and I tell most people that I'm just, that I write. And then if they start asking me more questions, then I have to kind of tell them a little bit more. And it just depends. But yeah, I don't really. When I was growing up, I was told that we weren't supposed to talk about what we do, and that because my whole family was into it. And the old teachers taught us that we kept everything to ourselves, that we only talked about it with other psychics. That you would know other psychics by their look, and that you were supposed to be able to read their minds. Mm-hmm. And that's how you knew if they were psychic or not. So, and if they didn't have that, then you were just to leave it alone, because they were so afraid back then of being persecuted and yelled at, and probably burned at the stake, some of them. And, so that's the way I was raised. It's just never talk about it, but it always got out because we were doing, you know, ghost bustings and weird stuff back in the day. And so people would whisper about us, but we never talked about it. But okay, well, now,
assume you sit next to me and I'm wearing a giant shirt that says "I love ghosts."
Right.
How would you answer the question then?
I would love that. I would tell them that I would tell you I talk to dead people. That's what I do. That's
okay.
I'm a future guy. I come from a family of psychics, so everybody kind of has their own little thing. My mom was the one that really got us into all this stuff because we had so many weird things happen to us when we were kids, when I was a kid. For her, it was like an empowerment thing. She just loved everything about it. But for the rest of us, it was a little uncomfortable. And I have a sister, Echo, who's written about 700 books. And I have another sister, Nikki, who's a medium. And then my kids have abilities. And my mm-hmm. dog has seances every Friday night. It's kind of in the family. And so if somebody stood next to me, I would tell them that that's what I do. But my stuff is all about opportunities coming up and relationships and mm-hmm. Doors that are coming and, you know, blocks me getting in the way of the doors. I'm not a big past life kind of guy or mm-hmm. And I'm not a medium. I don't really care about your Uncle Ralph who lost his teeth and he wants you to find them. That kind of stuff is great for people that need kind of validation about like spirits and that kind of thing.
Sure.
And it's really helpful for that kind of stuff. And I God bless people who could do that, but I just can't. Every once in a while I'll get somebody that shows up that has something to say, but it's pretty limited. But I'm mostly a future guy.
Okay.
That's where I'm most comfortable because I can kind of keep track of my accuracy and
sure.
and my timing and it kind of helps. It's exciting for me. I didn't really want to do this, to be honest. I'd rather just do about anything, but I suck at everything else. And so that's why I ended up doing this.
It's one of those things where we find more often than not, it's not something that people, you know, seek out or choose to do. It's one of those things that finds them. And everybody
right.
seems to have different strengths and weaknesses on the topic. I mean, the person who says that they can do all of it, that they can see everything and tell you anything, is the first person I'm going to be raising my eyebrows at going, yeah, I don't know about you. Because it seems just like you were, you know, you said you're a future guy. That makes sense. A lot of people,
yeah.
they have their strengths in specific areas. It's rare to see someone who legitimately can do everything and really,
oh,
you know,
God.
Knows, you know, and can really see all that. That just doesn't seem to be how this works. Let me ask you this. When did you first realize? I mean, obviously your family has quite a background in it. So I don't know if you'll even know the answer to this question because it probably goes way, way back. When did you first realize that you had some sort of ability or psychic ability?
Well, I learned what this stuff was when we were about 7. I noticed ever since I can remember, I saw colors around people, you know,
sure.
these auras things. And I just assumed everybody saw them. I really did. I thought that everybody kind of could see that stuff. Cause I would tell my mom or some of my friends about the colors around them, even when I was just tiny, but, I didn't know what they meant or anything like that. I didn't have any really significance with them. But when we started to have these psychic experiences, I think when I was, I was like around 7 and, this is the tricky part. My brother is the one that had the first experience, but he really hates the psychic stuff. He just hates it. He's kind of on the other end of the spectrum. He's, very conservative, very religious, doesn't like this kind of stuff mm-hmm. for whatever reason. And so he always asked that we never mention his name. So in my book, I had to make him my cousin because he was so freaked out by it. I tried to distance himself as much from the family because he, at his request.
Uh-huh.
But so my cousin had this experience when we were really young. He's about 6 years older than I am, and he was in his early teens, and he was downstairs playing the drums, and he was learning how to play, and he kind of was bad at it, and it sounded tinky tinky. We were all eating dinner, and all of a sudden it sounded kind of good. It sounded like he was kind of tight, you know, like he was putting it together. And we had assumed that maybe he put on one of those records, how to play the drums by kind of thing, because it did sound better. And that lasted maybe 2 or 3 minutes, and then all of a sudden we heard the door blam open and the drums being knocked down. And and my cousin comes flying upstairs, and he's scared to death. I mean, he looked like he literally saw a ghost. And at the time, I had known him to be a very serious kind of guy. Like, he was the tough guy. He was, the babes loved him. He was the football player and the artist and the, you know, the musician, that kind of guy, you know, just all around magnet for stuff, but sure, very serious. And so to see him scared like that was really the first time I'd ever seen that. And it was kind of fun for me to see him be afraid. But when he was trying to explain what it was, he kept getting tongue-tied. He didn't know exactly even how to explain it. My father was getting more upset, and my mother was getting worried. And finally, he just stopped. He says, okay, somebody came through the wall. He said he was down there playing the drums, and this black guy comes through the wall and parks himself right in front of him. Mm-hmm. And he's staring at my cousin. So my cousin puts his head down, and he's freaking out. And that's when he sounded really good, because the adrenaline got him, you know, playing really fast. And he looked up a couple of times, and he kept asking what this was. And finally he asked whatever this was to please leave, because he was really afraid. And it kind of acknowledged it and acknowledged him, and then went through the other wall. And that's when he flew upstairs. And when he got finished telling us, we all just kind of looked at each other like, okay, seriously, what happened? What did you do? Did you break a drum? Is that why you're being so weird? Because none of us believed them. But there was this really weird feeling in the air. There was like this something really weird. I don't know how to describe it. It was like somebody was in the room.
Okay.
So about a week later, we're all sitting eating dinner again, and this time with him, because he wouldn't go downstairs without a priest. And my mother and my father, we had this big table, and in the middle of the table, there was this Lazy Susan. And on this Lazy Susan, there was this salt and pepper shaker. And the salt shaker got up, and we were all sitting there talking, just a normal night. And this thing gets up and moves across the table and drops between my mother and my father. And at the time, there wasn't like organ music playing or anything like that. It was just, you're looking at this thing going, is that real? How do you do that? You know, I thought my brother hooked up a pulley system or something, and mm-hmm. Everybody else was just stunned. I mean, we stopped talking. We all just sat and looked at this thing. And when it dropped, it kind of like snapped us all too. And we were all like, okay, what was that? And my father got really mad and upset that my brother had done something, because he thought we had been giving my cousin so much crap about seeing a ghost the week before. We were like, hey, you should invite your friend over for dinner, blah, blah, blah. And so we just assumed it was him, but he was just like validated. He was like, see, I told you, there's something in this house. Anyway, more and more stuff started like that happening around the house. You'd walk and somebody was walking behind you. You'd turn around and there wasn't anybody there, or lights going on and off, or you'd open up a cupboard and things would slide out in your hand. You know, stuff like that, not all at once, not during the day or night. It wasn't a specific time or anything. It was just sometimes you were alone, sometimes you were with people when it happened. You'd go to reach for something and it would move. Weird stuff. And to the point where my mother had to try to find somebody. So she went to our minister, who suggested maybe it was a female issue. You know, maybe she was having some sort of issue and a mental issue, and so she needed to go talk to her gynecologist. And so my mother went to a gynecologist, and this guy was like, no, it sounds like a you're having a mental breakdown. So she went through like to a psychiatrist, to all sorts of people, and she ended up going to this psychologist lady that basically worked out of her car. She's kind of a new age kind of a psychologist lady. And this was back, you know, in the 60s. And so she told her about this Mrs. Olson, who lived in St. Paul. We live in Minneapolis, and St. Paul is just across the river. And she told her to go to call her and to set up an appointment so she can go talk to her. And my mom felt better, because she didn't think she was crazy. And she felt good that she didn't have to, you know, get a pap smear to go talk to find out what was going on with the spirits. So she wrote the number down and she came home and when she went up, so my mother used to collect Bibles. She was raised Catholic and she had a whole bunch of Bibles. And she said when she came home that all her Bibles were stacked up on the bed in this kind of weird manner. And nobody was home. We were all at school. But when I got home from school, she yelled at me because she thought that I did it. And I didn't even know she collected Bibles. And she said, don't play with the Bibles anymore. That's just, with all the weird stuff going on around here, you can't do that kind of stuff. Just don't. And I was like, okay. And so she put them away and she made dinner. And I remember she went upstairs to grab something and she screamed. And we all ran upstairs, and there were the Bibles again stacked up on her bed. Mm. And it was like they were just daring us, or daring her, I guess is a better way to put it. And so my mother did call Mrs. Olson. She wasn't going to. I think she was afraid that if she did, that something bad was going to happen to her. But when they started playing with the Bibles, I think that kind of pushed her over the edge. And so she called her up, and she invited her and my sister, Echo, to come to a reading. And that's when everything really started changing. That's when my mother got all this information and was told that our family was going to develop our psychic awareness and that three of the four kids were going to do it and how it was going to affect our lives and blah, blah, blah. And so that was when everything started.
Okay.
And it, for me, it sucked because, like I said, my mother got really into it. For her, it was like her own thing. It was, you know, some people, scrapbook. Well, she got into this and she loved it. She started going to different places because back then everything was underground. You know, all the psychics, they would meet in weird places. Mm-hmm. And she went to this one church where they met in the basement and then they all decided to start meeting at our house because we lived in this really nice house and it was big and, you know, it had carpeting and stuff. And so they figured, let's all go there. And so I kind of grew up with psychics always at the house, you know, not necessarily good psychics, but people that were kind of learning, you know, the people that were all kind of struggling outcasts, you know, different weird people. And so for me, it was kind of like an invasion of my lifestyle because when I would come home from school, they'd always want to practice on somebody. And so they'd always want to do readings on me, or they'd always want to show me something, or they'd always want to, teach me something. And I didn't, you know, I was a hyper kid. I wanted to play football and be a pilot and stuff. And so I didn't like it. And plus there was always that kind of creepiness going on because they were learning how to do stuff with Ouija boards and nobody really knew what they were doing. They were just learning. So it was a weird thing. And so that's how I grew up, and it wasn't, I didn't really grab onto it until maybe till I was 10 or 11, because I was scared to death of ghosts, and they made me go on these ghost busings to get over my fear, which I thought was pretty normal to have a fear of ghosts because they were scary, but they wanted me to, the old teachers wanted me to kind of get over it. I used to go to football camp and basketball camp, but then I started having to go to psychic camp.
Camp? Was that like a part of the 4-H program in Minnesota? Or?
Yeah.
I'm from Wisconsin. I don't recall that one ever being on the roster.
Yeah, it was great. Well, we would go to these places, and my mom would drive forever.
Okay.
They were all hidden, secret little places, and they were usually in the woods. It was like The Hobbit, you know, they'd be in the forest someplace, and each camp had sort of a different theme. Sometimes they were about nature spirits, or sometimes they were about oddities, you know, like vampires or just different things, or different kinds of psychics. You know, it was a medium thing one time, or it was all different. And so my mom would take me along because I was the youngest. And I, you know, these were nerve wracking because some of them were very interesting. Like the vampire one for me was probably the most interesting one, but, just because I had never seen a vampire before, and holy crap, they are very unique to say the least. And, you know, some of them were about fairies and different things, and you know, it was interesting and very, you'd walk away just going, wow, there's some pretty weird stuff out there. And I think that's what the whole purpose of them was. But you'd spend the whole weekend. You'd spend the weekend discussing and seeing and practicing. And
sure.
You know, it was one of those deals. I wish they had running water.
Yeah.
But they were all about the camp. You know, there was literally a camp thing.
Other kids are learning how to tie sailor knots and make fires out of sticks, and you're learning about how to rid the world of vampires. What that would be interesting. I'm a little bit envious, actually. Let's talk about ghost busting a little bit, because I know that's you actually describe yourself as a ghostbuster on your website. Let's talk about that a little bit. What that actually means, because I mean, obviously, there's the preconceived notion of a ghostbuster, you know, as told to us by Dan Aykroyd and Bill Murray and Harold Ramis and Ernie Hudson, but in the real world, a ghostbuster, what is it? What does it actually mean for you?
Well, okay, so like a ghostbuster is just somebody that comes in and cleans out a house from unwanted like weirdnesses, and there are so many psychics out there these days. I mean, everywhere you look, there's a psychic. So there's more people practicing things, and there's more activity now than there has been. I think maybe it's because I don't know what it is, but there just seems to be a lot of psychic activity. So people have more ghosts, and the whole theory is that that you die, and then your soul goes to the other side, and sometimes it does, sometimes it doesn't, but most of the time it does. And the people that doesn't are called earthbound, you know, for whatever reason. Maybe they're afraid to go to the other side. Maybe they're afraid they're going to be judged, or they don't want to be there. Or maybe they like the people that they're with alive and they can't let go, or whatever. It doesn't make them evil or demonic or anything. It just makes them kind of bored, and some of them are restless, and some of them are kind of jerks because they're, you know, maybe they were a jerk in real life and they want to be a jerk on the other side. So, and they're not evolving because they're not on the other side, you know, light-wise.
Sure.
Those are the people that I kind of run across. They're attracted to people that are more likely to see them. Like, you know, the last place that has got a lot of ghosts is really a cemetery. That's one of the most peaceful places you'll ever go if you're a psychic.
Okay.
Because spirits tend to go to places like bars or restaurants or theaters, places that are fun, places that hold good memories, places that people are more likely to see them or that they can be a part of life. Like they say that if you drink or if you do a lot of drugs, you kind of take that natural protection that's around you, and it kind of helps take that away so people can jump inside you and all sorts of stuff. It's a theory. I don't know. I tend to believe it, but it's, so spirits hang out a lot of places like that.
Sure.
It's just simple kind of stuff. Not really heavy handed. It's not like the places that I go to, it's very rare that the walls are bleeding, but if they can do that, that's kind of impressive, I think. It sucks because you got to clean it up, but it doesn't mean that this is just this terrible demonic thing. I've probably gone on 1,000 ghost bustings. And I think I've been involved with, you know, maybe one demon, and, I don't even think he was that bad, but, And they vary. Some of them are really bad. Some of them they're very active. They move things. They hurt people. They do all sorts of things. And then most of them are just boring, dull, bump in the night kind of stuff that people that are sensitive feel, and they can sense things around. And it's just a matter of kind of cleaning them out.
Now, I want to talk about the cleaning them out here in just a second. But before we get to that, I want to talk about the types of ghosts that are out there. Because, I mean, that gets into a lot of our discussion on this show as far as what's out there. I mean, this is where my perspective is, and I want to hear yours. It's that there's human ghosts or ones that were once human at one time, once walked the earth. And I believe that you can have, you know, there's very bad people who walk the earth who can also be a very bad ghost that I think a lot of times get confused for being a demon when it's just essentially a not so great person in death too. And then you have your normal people, happy people, active people who may, you know, cause a little bit more notice because that's how they are. And then majority of people are just boring. And that's a lot of ghosts like you just described. But then there does seem to be the other, you know, aspect of the demonic and the dark and the evil. So you believe that exists too, that there are, in fact, non-human entities that are out there?
Yeah, I do. I just don't think that they have, there seems to be a kind of a code that mm-hmm. they can't interfere. I think that they can watch. I think you can feel them, mm-hmm. but I don't think that they can interfere. I really don't. I think that there's, on both sides, I think there's an agreement that they can't, demons, you know, I know that if you're just looking at it as an energy thing, there's a lot of negative energy out there and there's gotta be a place where some of that energy gets built up. And mm-hmm. I think if you're just looking at it as a dark thing, I know it's out there. I felt it. Mm-hmm. I've been in situations where it's really dark, but, I think there's kind of a natural protection from demons. I think that word is just so overly used, and I think people over dramatize things because, like you said, I think there's far more jerks than there are demons. I'm really not, and I'm not saying that there's not that stuff isn't out there or that people don't practice preaching to that stuff. And you know what? They got their own stuff and I got my own stuff. I don't sure. really judge what they do and I don't expect them to judge what I do. I think it's one of those agreements. They leave you alone. We leave them alone. It's this whole battle thing. And I think that was settled a while ago.
Sure. So what is the process for you? Somebody says, hey, you know, Michael, I got some stuff going on in my house. I don't know what it is. Things are moving around. I'm hearing voices every now and then. Can you come and help me? How does that process work from there?
Well, first thing I do is tell them they're crazy.
Okay. Well, that's usually a good way to start the relationship.
No. Say, holy crap, what are you eating? I go to the place and I try and get a feel for... Usually it's best if you go with another person because for me, there's three parts to a ghost busting for me. There's the story. That's where the person who finally gets a chance to talk to somebody that they know won't think they're crazy. Mm-hmm. And so they want to tell you everything. And they usually do. They tell you stuff from that happened to them before birth. And they start telling you all the things that happened to them and their family and blah, blah, blah. And it drives me crazy. For me, the story is the hardest part to deal with on a ghost busting. Okay. I'd rather deal with four bleeding walls than listen to another story because the person is very enthusiastic and they want to, and they expect you to be enthusiastic about telling you something that you've probably heard a million times. Yeah. And I don't take it as well as some people do. You know, my sister, for instance, she can walk into a place and they can tell them the story and she'll be just fascinated. She's like, wow, I've never heard of that. Mm-hmm. And I know for a fact she's heard of it because we just heard it at the same place, you know, like a month ago. Mm-hmm. But I have less patience for that kind of stuff. But there is the story. You have to listen to the story. And then you kind of have to assess the situation. Is there really a ghost there? So you usually go through the place. Mm-hmm. I usually have my sister listen to the story while I go through the place myself, just to see if there's anything there, just to kind of get an initial opinion.
Sure.
If there is something there, or if there was something there, you can usually feel it. You mm-hmm. can usually feel like if there was a trace of something, or if it's there now, they'll show it to me.
Okay.
And then you go back and you talk about the situation. You tell them what you got, where you got it. And then you do the actual ghost busting, which is going, confronting the ghost, talking to it, finding out why it's there, what it wants, and helping it go to the other side. Mm-hmm. If there's a bunch of different scenarios, sometimes the ghost moves around a lot. You can seal off the rooms so that they're less likely to go back into a room. You can kind of corner them. You can, if it's an Indian burial ground, or there's something to do with like an Indian thing, that's a tough one, because you usually have to pay homage to the spirits that were there. You have to visually, you know, display a plaque or acknowledge their presence in some way. Otherwise, it's impossible to deal with. It depends on the situation. Sometimes it's the land. Sometimes it just can't do anything about it. The land is just bad. It's where people have died, or people were hurt or raped, or, you know, it's the land. Mm-hmm. And it you have to deal with it in a different way. Everyone's kind of different, but mostly it's just about, if on a simple, basic ghost busting, it's about confronting the spirit. If they won't go, you bring some relatives from the other side down to help them escort them up. And then you get rid of them, and then you clean it out with some sage after they've gone. And then you're done.
Okay.
It just depends. If there's a lot of them, it takes a lot longer. If you're lazy, you can kick them out and just seal the place up and have the neighbors deal with them. It just depends on what you're in the mood to do or what you want to do.
Sure. So do you ever have to like actually negotiate with the ghost to find out what they want and then meet some, I know you mentioned like some of the Native American spirits of that being the case, but beyond that, is there ever like, hey, the ghost has certain requirements one must meet in order for them to move on?
Right. Well, and yeah, there's always negotiations. It's always about selling or something. It's, the bottom line is you're trying to get them out of that place.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes you do have to negotiate with them. The truth is that they don't belong there. I mean, that's really the truth. They're spirits, and this is life, and they don't have any rights here. So you can always use that as a ultimate tool. Like, look, this is not where you live. This is not where you belong. But it's for the people that are there, sometimes they get tied into it. Like, okay, so we went on a ghost busting not too far from here, which is great, because normally we have to drive all the way to hell and back.
Sure.
And this place was pretty close. And the landlord had gotten a hold of us because the tenant that he was renting to was having problems. But the tenant didn't want to talk about it. So we go there, and it's this big strap and buck kind of guy, 6'4", looked like a Nordic kind of a guy.
Mm-hmm.
And he was very, very quiet, really shy. And he said, I don't know why you guys are here and blah, blah, blah. And I didn't know why we were there either, because it didn't feel like there was really anything there. It just felt like a normal place. The guy felt a little sad, maybe a little lonely, but he, it didn't feel weird or anything like that. And then I was ready to leave, but my sister was like, well, tell us what's been going on. And so his landlord started telling about some of the experiences that they noticed, like when they walked into the house. It was a female landlord, and when she would walk in the house, things would move or shake. And as she was describing these things, the guy started getting a little nervous, and you could tell.
Mm-hmm.
So then I said, is there a spirit that comes and visits you? Are you guys involved? Because it's actually a lot more common for spirits to be involved with some of the people that they're at the house. Like, it's usually more common with a male spirit involved with a female person, but it's kind of common. And
sure.
And when I said that, the guy got kind of uncomfortable, and then he finally broke down and said, he said that when he first moved in, that there was this female spirit, and he started to kind of get to know her, and she was really friendly to him, and it wasn't bad. He didn't want to get rid of him, but then they started to become a little more intimate, and eventually they started to become very intimate with each other, and
okay.
He said he really liked it. And he started feeling good about himself. Like, finally, he started feeling good about himself. And he thought, you know, maybe he could date somebody with skin, you know? And so he started talking about going out on a date, and that's when all the problems started. And that's when he said that the spirit got physically violent with him.
Okay.
And I had never seen, I'd seen a spirit get violent with people, but it was mostly on a different thing. Drugs were involved, and, you know, they were doing devil worship stuff. But it was interesting because I'd never seen this, a female spirit hurt a male physical mm-hmm. person. So I didn't really believe him. Mm-hmm. And I said, well, geez, you know, you're a pretty big guy. What do you mean physical stuff? And he said, well, she slaps me around a lot if I get, if I start talking about other girls. And I, long story short, I said, look, I don't really believe you. You're going to have to show me. And so he starts talking about some girl that he's going to go out with. And then he starts getting freaked out because he says, she's here. I can feel her. And it felt like the room got very dark. There was a noticeable difference in the temperature, in the presence, everything. You could feel it. Mm-hmm. And he was standing in the kitchen, and all of a sudden he throws himself against the refrigerator. And at first I was like, oh, come on, seriously? You know, is this like a production kind of thing?
Yeah.
And he starts yelling, going, get her off me, get her off me. And he's like moving his face back and forth like he's being slapped. And I thought, you got to be kidding. This is ridiculous. And yeah. and then he's backed up against the refrigerator, and all of a sudden I can see his shirt kind of being crumbled up. And then he goes, ow, and he grabs his chest, and he goes, damn it. And he unbuttons his shirt, and you can see these scratch marks on his chest. And you can see on his face these raised, like, handprints on his cheeks. Mm-hmm. And it was really interesting because I'd never seen that before. And sorry. I was like, oh, crap. Okay, sorry I didn't take you seriously here.
That's quite a demonstration.
So then we had to deal with it. But at the time, it was really, it was weird because we couldn't get rid of the spirit unless he participated. He had to agree that he wanted her to go. And he didn't necessarily really want her to go because he still really liked this thing. So it involved a lot more than just your typical Ghostbusting.
It was almost like a paranormal breakup, if you will.
Exactly. Yeah. Wow. And it took we were the mediators, and
yeah.
And finally he did agree, and she did leave, but then I guess he moved away, and I kind of suspected he probably got her back because those two, they liked each other a lot. And I he was such a shy guy that I think he preferred the dead over the living.
Wow.
So, but at the time it was pretty interesting.
On again, off again with a dead. Wow. When you get someone out, or when you get a ghost to leave a location, let me ask, are you helping them move on? You know, as a lot of people, you know, say, like helping them move towards the light, or are they just simply moving to another location, like geographically?
Well, that's true. Sometimes you just do, you know, sometimes you just think, screw it, I don't want to deal with this.
Yeah.
And you just send them to the neighbors, you know, and that's not the most responsible thing to do in the world. I know that the most responsible thing is to get rid of them, help them go, transformation and all that sort of stuff. And that's what you really want to do most of the time. But sometimes they're just a pain and you just think, oh man, you know, it's going to take months to get this guy to go. Mm-hmm. And they've been around for so long and they're determined to stay, that it's tough to, it's really tough to get them to go. You have to have like leverage. You have to have somebody from the other side come down and help you a lot of times because they just won't go. And, you know, I can't say that I've gotten rid of, I've brought everyone to the light because I haven't. Mm-hmm. There's been a few occasions where I just said, screw it, and kicked them out of the house and sealed off the house with the sage and the white light and made sure that they wouldn't come back to that house. But, I don't know where they went, and I don't charge, you know, I'm more of a, donation kind of a guy. If I can get gas money, that's great.
Sure.
So I'm not, you know, putting one ghost into one place and then switching them over to another place so I could make dough.
It's like, and you have like a little tiered system of like one ghost, and we'll give you this bonus, you know, sage ghost away. You can spray for the next couple of weeks. But if you call now, we'll get rid of the neighbor's ghost too. Is there ever a case where the ghosts just can't or won't leave?
Yeah, there's been, I've had, but those are usually associated with, like I said, the Indian things. The Indians, they'll stay. They'll be respectful of the owners.
Okay.
Where some sort of event happened, a battle or something.
Sure.
They'll stay, but they'll be respectful.
Okay.
Sometimes it's just too. They're just too determined. Mm-hmm. I know that. I know some Ghostbusters think that they can. I don't know. I swear, some people just have the biggest ego. They think they can do whatever they want, and they can control everything. But it's not. It's not like that. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of nuances that come to play, and sometimes it's better if the spirit stays. Or sometimes it's a karmic thing; they have to stay there. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not all about what you think, but.
Are there geographic limitations as to where a spirit can and can't go? Like, let's say you were able to get one to leave a residence, but you weren't able to help them cross over into the light, and they had to go somewhere else. Are they required, for whatever reason, to stay within a certain area of like a boundary, or can they literally hop a plane and go across the world if they wanted to?
Well, you know, that's funny. I think a lot of times they're stuck by their own thinking. They believe that they can't go any further. I think that they all can go, but I think their own beliefs have them trapped. I think that some of them believe that if they go move on from where they are, mm-hmm. for whatever reason, they don't feel like they can. It's the fear thing that comes in. It's funny. Some people don't even know they're dead. You have to remind them that, you know, you're toast, and they're just shocked. They're just like, wow, I didn't know that. Or some of them just feel so ashamed for whatever they did here, but they think for sure that they're going to get punished. And mm-hmm. so they're locked into that area and they won't go anywhere. And most of the time when we ghost bust, it's because the person is remodeling or tearing down the house, or, there's some sort of physical change to the house. Mm-hmm. It's usually the spirits get a little upset, and they don't like it. They don't like things being screwed with, mm-hmm. and they start showing up and moving things, and it's those they like the physical area that they're in, so they convince themselves that that's where they can't go any further.
Okay,
it's not true, but. Then when they find out the truth about things, that's when they can make a better choice about going to their side. It's really about going to the other side, because that's where you learn stuff. That's where you see things.
Sure.
You can look objectively at things. And earthbound spirits don't have that. They're still more like us. They think more like us. Mm-hmm. And when the people on the other side go to the other side, they see things in a very different light. They mm-hmm. they see what we're here to do, like we're here to learn, and we're limited with our stuff, and that they're not. And it's a whole different thing. But I think earthbound spirits are still bound by their fears and anxieties.
When you use sage, when you sage a house, we talk about this quite a bit, and it's one of those questions that it seems everybody has a little bit different take on saging. At least that's what we get quite a bit. You know, one person will say you do it this way. We get someone that writes in or calls in and says, that's, you're doing it all wrong. It needs to be done this way. My question is there a specific type of sage you have to use to do this? Or can I use the same stuff I use in my turkey?
Yeah, that's Well, for me, I mean, if you want to, go into a house that's really bad and heavy and and it's, you use your turkey sage, that's a whole different thing. I say do it.
Okay.
I mean, good luck with that. For me, I get mine blessed. You know, you get some Indian people. They bless it. They put some stuff into it.
Okay.
And I use it after I've cleaned out the house. You know, some people do it differently. I don't, whatever works for them, but what's worked for me is, spirits leave kind of a trace with them. It's like, you know, that vibe. If you go up to an accident that just happened, it's kind of got that weird vibe, or mm-hmm. some violent act or something. It's got that weird vibe. Sage is really good at, cleaning that up. It's like Bonami, you know, it's just great for cleaning up, bad vibes and taking away all that heaviness.
Okay.
Some people use it to actually get rid of spirits, but that's tough, you know, for me. I suppose if they're kind of weak, you could do that, but it's, they're for the rinse cycle for me. Sage is more for the rinse cycle.
Okay.
And I use stuff that's blessed and, that, you know, is great for, like, if you're possessed.
Yeah.
This stuff helps. But for me, I use it after I've gotten rid of the spirits. It cleans it up nice, you know? So when the person walks through it, they feel better. It feels lighter. You know, if I just use it to try and get rid of the spirit and the spirit's still there, it still has that weird vibe to it.
Sure. We get a lot of stories here on the show of people who have had a haunting, have had something paranormal going on in their life, in their home. And they do a Google search for whoever is around in their area that claims to be able to, you know, get rid of ghosts, maybe whether it be a ghost investigating team, whether it be someone who claims to be a ghostbuster of some sort. And, you know, maybe and honestly, a lot of them, as you know, do not have a lot of experience. It's more so they watch a lot of ghost hunters on television and went down to Radio Shack and got a couple meters. And now they think they're going to rid homes. That's not. Unfortunately, there's a lot of that out there, but when that happens, we then end up getting a lot of stories of, well, we called somebody in and now it's gotten worse. So there's a lot of bad Ghostbusters out there.
I agree.
What makes a bad Ghostbuster, and what type of damage can they do?
Well, I teach ghostbusting classes just for that reason.
Sure.
Most of my jobs that I do now are from cleaning up from other Ghostbusters that went in and they empowered the spirit. There's something happens when you Ghostbust.
Mm-hmm.
It's a lot of times these guys, these spirits that are there, they will work on a fear of yours. They will make you anxious. They will try to make you as uncomfortable as they can. It becomes kind of a game with them. And especially if these rooster people come in and they're like, "Oh, show yourselves, I'll show you, blah, blah, blah."
Yeah.
And what they do is they kind of work on your fears and they get to you. It doesn't, maybe you're afraid of whatever. It could be anything. And they will multiply that. And what happens is that some of these people that are just going in there, they get really scared and they get nervous and they don't know what they're doing. And it's a subtle thing. Most of the time ghosts wait to find out a little bit about you, wait to find out your weaknesses. And right when you're feeling comfortable, right when you're feeling good, they'll kind of sneak up behind you. Maybe they'll tap you on your shoulders. Maybe they'll pull your hair. Maybe they'll just kind of whisper in your ear, but you get that chilly, weird feeling. And then you start to get afraid. You start thinking, "Oh crap, maybe I don't know what I'm doing." And then it starts to overwhelm you and you have bad anxiety. And a lot of times these ghost people will just, to cover themselves, they say, "Well, okay, well, we got rid of it. Everything's good." And they haven't. They just made the spirit feel more confident. They've made him more empowered. And so when the next group of people come, the spirit figures, "Hey, I got rid of those guys. I can get rid of these guys." Where before, maybe they didn't think so. And so you take away the spirit's vulnerability by giving yours up. And it sucks because you have to walk in there with a different attitude. And it's not about being manly and being unafraid, because it's nerve-wracking, you know, some of the stuff is nerve-wracking.
Sure.
But it's about being realistic about, look, I'm alive, you're dead, you can't be here, this is why, and it's about dealing with that kind of stuff. And they use all sorts of different tactics. They, you know, from lights to to noises, to smells, to fog. You know, they'll use fog. They'll use all sorts of stuff. Mm-hmm. And so when I do my ghost hunting classes, it's kind of like boot camp for those people. It's I put them through a 2-day course and I scare the crap out of them. I put them in every situation that they've been, all the negative situations that I've been in. And I expose them to it, and I have them step back and realistically deal with it, so that when they go through a real ghost busting, they're not going to be afraid, or they're not going to make it worse for somebody else. And it's tough because so far in the classes I've done, not every it's a 2-day class, and not so far nobody's made it. The entire class has not made it through the entire course, but because somebody will leave or they'll freak out or get possessed or something. And I hold them in a haunted house, and I expose them to stuff. I, you know, put them in a place where it's the worst, and you know, do a séance, stuff, you know, that you wouldn't normally do. But it's the whole purpose is so that people don't do what you were just talking about, make it worse, so that they feel strong about it. They feel the people feel empowered. It's a lot of times Ghostbusters make it worse because they leave. Yeah. Or they just give them power, and it's mostly because they're curious. But it's a creepy thing because it's not like scary organ music. It's the stuff that stays with you. Mm-hmm. It's the stuff that leaves with you, that, you know, sticks with you for days. It's uncomfortable, and so people that don't know what they're doing, I don't think that they really know what they're doing.
What about self-help ghost busting, if you will? Someone who has something going on in their home, they don't feel comfortable calling someone to come in and take a look at it, or give advice, or try and bust it out professionally. Should an individual who has a haunting ever, who wants it to go away, ever attempt to interact with the ghost, or simply ask it to leave?
Yeah, you can. It unfortunately, a lot of times, a dialogue starts setting up.
Yeah.
They want to stay. You know, the spirit wants to stay, and they're not necessarily going to act belligerent. They may even be charming. They may even be friendly. And you start thinking, hey, you know, I can have a pet ghost. What's the problem? Mm-hmm. And that happens a lot. And you could ask it to leave, but it kind of thinks, oh, you don't really want me to leave, and then. It starts to feel part of the family, and then you get this whole squatters thing. And I've had to do a lot of ghost bustings where people have kept ghosts as pets, in a sense, and then they finally realized that the pets were getting too much apart, like they were disciplining the kids. You know, they were spanking the kids, or they were, you know, yelling at the kids, and you know, they overstepped their bounds. And that's the problem, is that honestly, no spirit should be here unless they're here to help. Mm-hmm. And that would be the best thing if the person felt empowered, mm-hmm. and asked the spirit to leave, because they have every right to. Mm-hmm. They don't necessarily need a Ghostbuster if they feel pretty strong about it. It's just like if somebody showed up in their house.
Sure.
But if they start having a conversation with it and start engaging with it and start, you know, liking it, then it becomes a problem.
That seems to be what we hear a lot of is, you know, oftentimes we get calls from people or emails from people who say, you know, it was really a light haunting, little things and move here and there. We'd notice that there was something going on, and then I started interacting with it and talking to it. Not asking it to leave necessarily, but just interacting with it. And then it got worse and worse and worse. And then that's where it gets out of control. But then we've also gotten a lot of calls and stories from people who've said, okay, I recognize there was something going on that was abnormal, that was not the electricity. It wasn't carbon monoxide. It wasn't this or that. It was clearly something paranormal. And I simply sat down, reasoned with it, and didn't necessarily have a dialogue back and forth, but said, hey, you know, if we're going to live here together, I don't want to see you. I don't want to hear from you. You can be here, but let's not interact. And then that seems to make it go away in some cases. And in some cases, that just kind of wreaks all havoc as well. You never know exactly what's going to happen. That's why I ask, you know, is it ever a good idea? Is it a good idea to risk that you know, pull of the slot machine of you're going to get jackpot. It's going to listen to you, or it's going to, you know, totally, you know, make your life worse.
Well, if it was up to me, I would say no. I would say do not have that dialogue unless you want it to be around.
Okay.
Because it's, gosh, I mean, I'm amazed that any of them have been okay when they have that discussion. Yeah, you can hang out, but I just don't want to see you. I mean, God, that's amazing to me.
Yeah, we get that story probably once a week from somebody where they simply said, hey, you know, we came to terms, if you will. And it's really calmed down, but they're sharing all the odd things that had happened up until that point. Let me ask you this about ghosts and just their origination in an atmosphere. The things that make total sense to me are, you know, a home, someone that lived in there at one point in time, maybe a family that lived in a place at one point in time or had a family member. The geographic hauntings make total sense. Can an entity be attached to an object where then it's simply a matter of getting rid of that object and is also getting rid of the entity?
Yeah, that happens a lot.
Okay.
With but it's kind of like if you had a ring or a watch or a bracelet or something that reminded you of a time or a place or a person, and that was the one link that you had, it becomes much bigger than life. It's more about what that represents than really what it is. And that happens. You can tell though, as soon as you hold something or feel it, you can tell if that's the object that's doing it. And, and back in the old days when we were learning, that was really how we got rid of most of them. Was you could tell that there was an object in the room or the house that was keeping the spirits there. And so you'd eliminate that one. That's when we didn't know how to get rid of them. That's how we thought was the best way to do it. And so, and a lot of times at work, we learned that there was more to it and blah, blah, blah. But a lot of times it was all about the object. And unfortunately, my mom would bring it all to our house whenever something was possessed. She loved that stuff. And my friends would see these things, these ghosts sitting in these couches she would get or whatever. And they would freak out. And she just loved that stuff. She just, man.
Hey kids, look at the new toy we got for you today.
Yeah.
It's a doll. Its name is Annabelle. Hope you guys like it.
Yeah. Casper's here. Yeah.
Are there any objects that are more likely to be haunted than others?
Usually it's a jewelry kind of thing, and that's just because it's got a personal attachment to it. Mm-hmm. Somebody felt comfortable with it, or they associate it with something loving or positive or happy.
Mm-hmm.
I've been around a lot of furniture that have spirits in it, old chairs, old couches, things that they sat in, the people sat in. And they just like their favorite chair. Not so much TVs, although I know that they used to do that. They used to come out of TVs, but I think it was more for effect than anything. It wasn't necessarily. It was just more to kind of freak people out.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's mostly jewelry and furniture that I've noticed.
Okay.
Once in a while, you'll see a painting, but not very often.
Does jewelry and furniture, I mean, we've talked about this on our show before, too, about, and my theory on it with jewelry and furniture, because we kind of came to that conclusion just based on the hundreds of stories that we've gotten. Is it the fact that these objects tend to be so close to our bodies in life?
Yeah, I think so.
That somehow our energy is just, by sheer proximity, physical proximity, that some of it is just wears off into them?
I would think so. I mean, I've had some jewelry on and I can't imagine that. I mean, I could, yeah, I think so. When, this is going to sound a little odd, but there was, this one religious group used to bring me their jewelry and they would ask if I would sleep with it underneath my pillow so it would clean the vibes off it, so that it would clean it off.
Okay.
They wanted me to clean it off, and I used to do that all the time, and I had to finally stop doing it because it was it just was too noisy.
You were like the K Jewelers of ridding it of paranormal entities. Like, can you clean my ring for me?
No.
That'd be interesting. Go into like the mall jewelry store and go, can you clean this? No, I mean, it's clean, like physically, but I mean, like rid it of the spirits. Is there a dip you can put that in back there?
They just needed somebody neutral that they felt had some ability to, that would kind of clear it off. So I used to do that a lot, but it's kind of dumb.
Sure. It's interesting. I mean, that's a very interesting thing to do. I mean, it makes sense. I mean, for the topic we're talking about, it's one of those things that we're constantly saying, well, that makes total sense, for a topic that really, pretty much anything goes because of all the stories that we hear. So,
that's true.
So very, very interesting. Michael, thank you so much for talking with us today. I know you
it was fun for me. Thank you.
I love it. Growing Up Psychic, of course, is the book you have out right now on your website, michaelbodine.com. We'll link up on the website at realghoststoriesonline.com. And we'd love to have you back on again. I know you're working on another book right now. Is that right?
I am. It was first called 10 Reasons Why Not to Go to a Psychic, but then the publisher didn't think that was a good idea. It's about answers and how people get their own answers. I just happen to believe that if people believed, if they listened to their own intuition, that they wouldn't need psychics. And I really believe that. And so I was excited about trying to explain how other people listen to their own stuff and how they got their own answers. And so that's what the book's about. It's a humorous look at how to get your own answers.
All right, well, when it comes out, I'd love to have you on the show again to talk about that.
Well, thanks.
That would be great. Michael, thank you so much again for talking with us here at Real Ghost Stories Online.
Thank you.
There you go. If you like the show, please consider supporting it, becoming an EPP. That's an extra podcast person. Get a bonus episode of the show sent to you every single week. Tons of those instantly sent to you right now from our backlog archive. And you get a brand new one every single week, so it's not a bad trade-off. You keep our show on the air, and we give you a little something extra. Actually, a lot of something extra. You can just sit there and binge on episodes for more than a couple days now. So check it out, realghoststoriesonline.com. Help keep us on the air. Hope you like the interview. MichaelBodine.com, by the way, again, his website to check out his work. Very interesting stuff. Until next time, for Jenny Brewski, I'm Tony Brewski. Thanks for listening to another episode of Real Ghost Stories Online.